Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with Episode 66 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling Return of the Road, River, and Rail, Cassavant Talks Transportation. As I indicated in Episode 65, the first half of my interview with Ken Cassavant, agricultural economist at Washington State University, he's forgotten more about transportation economics than I have ever known. It's not because there isn't information out there. Every week I get the Grain Transportation Report. Google it. Just like this podcast, it's a weekly but runs to 20 pages or more. Did you know that railroads originate about 24% of U.S. grain shipments? I thought it would be higher, but that's a fact according to the Grain Transportation Report. I think that just goes to show there's a lot of grain shipped south on the Mississippi River system, not to mention our Pacific Northwest River system, and the report devotes many pages to barge traffic statistics. There's also information on U.S. containerized grain exports. Indonesia is number one. It takes the biggest slice at 17% of the container export loads of grain. I'm sure a lot of this information is the sort that analysts pore over to understand market movements. Where else are you going to find out that Class 1 railroads originated 23,198 grain carloads during the week of March 8th, which is up 11% from the previous week, but down 10% from a year earlier? If you stop to think about it for a moment, transportation is no less essential than the seed farmers plant in their fields. The thing that America has that makes it a fearsome competitor, despite higher cost of production, is a fully integrated system that works efficiently. But every link depends upon every other link. We don't talk about transportation enough, but it's just as vital as any of the other links, and perhaps even more likely to gum up the works. Without transportation, Pacific Northwest wheat farmers could do everything right when it comes to growing a high-quality, abundant crop, and yet be out of luck without a way to get it to market. As Cassavant said in Episode 65, the first half of my conversation, we in the Northwest are blessed by the fact we have three transportation alternatives: truck, rail, and barge. But once the grain gets to port, we're all in the same boat, so to speak. The fact that loading a grain ship in the U.S. Pacific Northwest is more expensive than loading it just up the coast in Vancouver, British Columbia, is drawing more attention from the industry. I asked Cassavant about the price differential between the two countries.
We have heard buyers and experts notice the concerns about the differing rates. In fact, we've noticed enough that our buyers overseas say, why does it cost us so much to load in addition to what we pay for transport? So I think we don't know for sure what that is yet, whether it's true. There's been some discussion whether we should do a quick study to find out if it's true, and if so, what's the magnitude of it? And then if so, we better go talk to the ports, and those port need volume just like everyone else. And if they realize that their handling rates are inhibiting the growth of that volume, maybe we can get some changes in it.
We've been talking about trucks and railroads and barges. Barges have less greenhouse gas footprint. I'm wondering, is that going to come into the discussion in terms of just how environmentally friendly barge transportation is versus railroad, or are they both close enough so that it doesn't really matter?
Well, frankly, they've gotten a lot closer to each other over time. Historically, you know, just like falling water is the cheapest electricity you can have, movement of water in a river is the cheapest form of transport. But as we've gone from one car shipments and rails to three to five, now 110, those economies have brought the relative energy efficiencies closer together. On energy and on the emissions, I think Bart still has a competitive advantage. Again, that word competition, competitive advantage. But as we get more interested and concerned about carbon and whatever we want to call climate conditions, we may well see barge being more attractive than rail. The difficulty with our barge movement is we don't grow anything on the river. It has to be transported by truck, which is energy inefficient, ecologically impacting, carbon producing. And the further we get away from the river, the less the competitive advantage is with the barge.
Commodities like coal and oil seem to take first priority for the railroads, and grain falls off the radar during periods of rail congestion, as happened a couple of years ago. There's also constraints throughout the rail system as trains pass through cities and towns, not to mention there's only so many trains that can go through the gorge. Meanwhile, the river has unused capacity. Is river transportation really the more reliable alternative in the future?
I think most people will agree that it is the most reliable, it is the cleanest, subject to that distance they have to haul it on truck, it's the safest, it's the lowest cost to the shipper. That's going to be its future, to use those advantages and maintain them. The bottom line is that we get the benefits here, the costs are carried by the taxpayers in the U.S., and as long as it's that way, here in the Northwest, it's going to be in our best interest to maintain the barge, subject to the political pressure or the legal pressure from the courts as far as maintaining an environment for the salmon and other river inhabitants. One of the issues that people talk about when they talk about losing barge movement is, do our railroads have enough capacity to handle that? And if not, if they have to invest, what kind of rates will they charge in order to pay for the new investment? It's entirely possible that, A, the water-compelled rates will increase, and secondly, the necessary investment may call for a higher rate being charged for. Now, our railroads are still private, but there might be a reason, just like we made a movement into state-owned railroads, there might be a movement for the state or public entities to provide rail cars and capacity. It's going to be an interesting time.
Well, we already do that with the grain train, don't we?
We do, and that's been efficient and effective. In fact, I think we might even see that grow over time. Remember, the grain train first started as a result of a class action suit against one of our oil companies. They said the settlement had to be put in environmentally positive, and they first bought one grain train, 12 cars or something like that, and now we have three or four operating because it works so well, and the state is providing that. And again, they think they're getting a return on that to warrant that investment.
So let's go back to that question, the salmon numbers on the river. I mean, I was just reading a story the other day in terms of the salmon that are moving past Bonneville, for instance, that is a higher number of, you know, this particular species of salmon than before Bonneville was built. Apparently you disagree.
Well, certainly before Bonneville was built, whatever we have now, whatever the run is, it was 15 times as much. But that was before they put in all the fishing factories and we started hitting them hard. So it's not a navigation, solely a navigation impact. It's how we're using the river compared to a free-flowing natural river back in the late 1800s or 1900s.
So you're saying, in essence, it's not just the dams?
Oh, there's no question it's not just the dams. We've been milking the river for salmon for many years until we finally realized what was happening, and were had enough people concerned about it, we weren't getting anything done as far as restoration. Electricity, power, flood control, just the very existence of dams has a natural change occurring to the river. We know that. The issue is, how can we respond and generate the best benefits out of that river system? Our Columbia Snake River and the ports along the ocean are the number one wheat export gateway. Is it important? Yes. Have we been using it? Yes. Are there potential constraints on it? Yes. Part of that is periodically, some of our dams are 100 years old. Even concrete breaks, and certainly the metal breaks. That's why we're in a situation now, we've had two major shutdowns on the river for lock outages to repair major equipment at the lockage themselves. That's going to occur more often, and it's going to require more money, and it's certainly going to affect the service that's available. Thus far, we've been able to hold it to a 10 or a 12-week lock outage. If it gets any longer than that, producers are going to start getting used to moving it by another mode, and they may not come back after. We've done two studies here at Washington State University, and both of them indicate as soon as the lock opens up again, there's a rush back to the river. So people are using it now and want it available, but it'd be interesting to see what happens.
Let's talk about Portland. Portland is inland from the ocean. There are facilities that are more ideally located that ships don't have to make this long traverse up the Columbia River. I'm wondering, will that put Portland at a disadvantage just because the ships don't want to come up?
There's no question that distance upriver results in increased rates, more expense to the steamship line or the ship that's coming in. Given alternatives, they'd rather not deadhead or come up that far in the river, although the Corps thus far has done an excellent job in maintaining and dredging and keeping it safe. But it is more expensive, and it takes time. Every day a ship operates is thousands upon thousands of dollars. And so that's going to be a competitive disadvantage. It's been a disadvantage for years, but the efficiencies of the barge movement itself has helped overcome some of that issue.
Let's ask the question about climate change. How does climate change, if it is indeed happening, affect the transportation system that we have?
Let's see. The first thing it does is it may well affect what is being moved on the river. And by that I mean, as temperature changes, we've already seen a shift. I come from North Dakota, and we never had corn or sunflowers up where I was. Now both of those are being grown and efficiently competitive to other areas. So we're going to see a shift in demand by different products in different areas. That will cause us to have to respond with the kind of transportation, either barges that we develop and build, or marketing facilities on the river or even upcountry. So I see the first thing to be in that shifting of crops that are being grown. We are getting more specialty crops. Well, specialty crops, A, might command a higher price, and B, can handle the cost of maybe that expensive truck, like what is happening now with the containers of peas and lentils being trucked to Seattle and Tacoma. Never thought it'd happen. It's expensive. But if you have no alternative, you're going to do it.
Well, and what about the pulse industry? I mean, Tim McGreevy at the USA Dry Pea and Lentil Council, he envisions a time when there will be 600 to 800,000 acres of winter pulses in eastern Washington. I'm wondering how you're going to deal with all of those pulses.
Well, that comes back to capacity again. If that is a incremental addition, it's going to put more pressure on our railroads. It's going to put more pressure on any barge movements. But it may, if it gets that large, it may make it feasible for a container to come back to Portland. If the volume is there and the demand is there, the market system usually responds.
Well, here's a question out of left field. We didn't mention UAVs, unmanned aerial vehicles, also known as drones. Are drones going to play a role at all in our transportation system of the future?
Okay, I haven't thought about this, but they're not going to be moving large volumes of freight, of the kind of freight that we grow here in the Northwest. I don't think that'll ever happen.
Could it potentially be carrying parts to farmers out on their fields?
Absolutely. In fact, as the drones become more used by farmers, they're already using them now to determine how much irrigation, how much fertilizer they ought to be putting on, using them to some extent. They could certainly hook up, and the John Deere dealer in Colfax, Washington, could send a drone out with some parts instead of someone having to stop their combine or send a man in a truck in. That could easily be an exciting part of the future.
I've been fascinated by the consolidation of the upcountry elevator industry during my time working around the industry. For cooperatives, it's ultimately about getting their farmer owners the best deal. I asked Cassavant how he perceives consolidations from a transportation point of view.
All of those mergers may have been done in order to take advantage of some of the transportation efficiencies. As we've shrunken the number of firms, but not necessarily the number of houses, much of that has been to be able to move it when you can to where it's wanted. And shuttle trains or rail or barge movements are ways to take advantage of that. Some of our co-ops have made investments on the river, which in fact is one of the impacts that we'll be looking at, that they could lose all of that investment if barge were moved away.
I'm a bit disappointed that Cassavant's cheerful disposition doesn't come across in our interview as well as it does in person. When I ask him about his approach to work, he was reminded of a fellow professor who once told him, "You only seem to do things if they're fun, and if you have to do them, you make them fun."
And I've kind of adopted that, and I think that's what helped me. Like I said, I'm in my 50th year at WSU and been a transportation economist all that time. I've seen a lot of changes, had some weird policies, made some outstanding friends. I've taught thousands of people, not thousands, but certainly, yeah, some thousands of people that are farming right now. Or if not, like Director or CEO Mr. Squires was a grad student, and he's working for the grower in his capacity.
And he's speaking of my boss, CEO Glenn Squires of the Washington Grain Commission. As you look back over those 50 years, what is the best thing that has happened with regard to transportation in eastern Washington? What is the worst thing that has happened?
Wow, that's good. The worst thing is that when we had to lose all of those rail lines, and particularly when they were abandoned rather than being sold off and become short line railroads. We went through a period there of about 15 or 20 years where the rail lines were abandoning left and right, and ICC at that time was allowing them to do it. That was difficult. That took away a lot of support. And what it did was it transferred some of that assembly cost to the farmer. Now, the farmers reacted now by our co-ops building shuttles or building larger 5, 10, 15-car facilities, but that cost has been transferred back to the producer. I think that's the initially bad thing that happened. The other would, just being straightforward, is I would hope our salmon runs reach a stage where barge elimination doesn't have to be part of the picture anymore. I don't know if that has happened. Mother Nature takes care of itself. Unfortunately, we get in a position where one year we get hopeful. It's like when you first meet your girlfriend. And then the next year she's gone somewhere else. And that's what our salmon runs look like. If we can get some stability and recovery, maybe the issue will go away and we'll continue to have our complete transportation system.
It was harder to get Cassavant to comment on what was the best thing that happened to transportation during his career, but I persisted.
The realization by people that aren't in the freight or grain movement how important freight and grain movement is in the transportation picture. So many of our politicians, and I don't mean that negative, our elected officials, are from urban areas. So they're concerned about how long does it take me to get from A to B and what's the safety of doing that. All good rational reasons to be concerned. But over the last 15 to 20 years, people are now realizing how important freight is to the economy and, frankly, how important that freight, that truck or that rail is to the guy that all he does is eat, sleep, and work and recreate, we hope. There's a realization of the importance of freight transportation, and that's a good thing because then we can work together. One of the small points that I often mention is that if you can get a truck off the highway, you made room for five cars because that's roughly the ratio as far as the space and the speed. Well, if you think about it, if we can improve our railroads, utilize our waterways and keep trucks or minimize the truck movement, we're getting a very positive change.
There's so much to be grateful to for living in the Pacific Northwest that one may be excused for forgetting our complete transportation system and how it all works together to keep transportation rates low. Taking freight off the road and putting it on barges and railroads pays dividends for everyone. Farmers have access to inexpensive freight, and there is less damage and congestion on public roads. I'm particularly grateful the state saw fit to purchase several of the short lines that were up for abandonment and has increased the number of rehabilitated hopper cars available for use. Private enterprise is great, but left to private enterprise, I don't think any of those short lines would have been saved. Now two of them have become integral to regional grain powerhouses, Highline Grain and Northwest Grain Growers. I hope you've enjoyed the second part of my conversation with Ken Cassavant, agricultural economist at WSU, or what I entitled Return of the Road, River, and Rail. Cassavant Talks Transportation. Please join me again next time for another episode of Weed All About It.
We're all children of a special treat, a miracle of nature that we just call wheat. A crop that's in the Bible, a crop that's in our bread, a crop that's filled our bellies and held us in good stead through a history of starvation and times of want and woe. Our wheat has been our savior, our grub, our gruel, our dough. There's always lots of problems when we have enough to eat. But there's only one dilemma when there's not enough wheat. We feed you.